Hello and welcome to the F1 Feeder Series podcast, your guide to keeping up to date on everything in the junior single-seater world. I'm your host, Jim Kimberly, and it was Freca in focus last week. This week, we're switching to the sister-slash-rival championship that sits below FIA F3 with Euro Formula Open. To join me in having a look back at the 2022 EFO season, we have two guests who did their best to disrupt previous guest Olli Goethe from taking the crown. First, let me introduce a driver who took P4 in the standings and who waited until the very last race to make a fashionably late entrance to the winner's step. From Crypto Tower Racing, it's Freddie Lubin. How are you today, Freddie?
Yeah, very good, mate. Thanks for having me here. It was a late win, but at least we did it in the end.
Hey, when you got the winner's trophy, no one's taking that off you. So
exactly.
No stress at all. Congratulations as well. Happy days.
Thank you.
And then also joining Freddie, and from my understanding, dragged onto the show kicking and screaming by Freddie, is another race-winning driver. This racer took 3 wins in the series in 2022, and according to Wikipedia, was born a relatively stone's throw away from my town of birth in the West Midlands. Welcome to the podcast, fellow, as you called it before we started, Northern City escapee, Josh Mason.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me today.
It's great to have you on. And I'm just going to explain to the people who are listening rather than watching that you are sitting in a car because you love cars oh so much.
Yeah, that's the real reason why I'm in the car, you know.
Yeah, it looks like, well, I hope you got the heating on because it looks like it could get pretty damn cold in there. It's so dark.
No, it's nice and very cozy in here, so it's all good.
Fantastic. Well, glad to have you on, no matter where you are joining from. And finally, a little birdie tells me that as well as loving British F4 photography, toothbrush colours, this F1 Feeder Series editor has a soft spot for Euro Formula 2. Welcome back to the podcast, Tom Evans. Care to clarify that rumour?
Well, yeah, that's true, to be honest. I don't know why I like Euro Formula as much as I do. I think it's the cars mostly, probably the main thing that draws me to the series. But yes, I do also enjoy toothbrush colours as well.
Everyone's got their things. There's no pink shaming here, but I see a knowing nod from Freddie there about loving the cars and everything. So
yeah.
Glad to have you on, Tom, and you can guide us through this a little bit as well. But before we get started, another shout out to the F1 Feeder Series Discord server. If you missed last week's episode, you also missed me boasting that we now have over 170 real drivers from the Feeder Series world on Discord. We have drivers from karting all the way up to FIA Formula 2. And of course, we have a passionate community with who you can talk about F1's Feeder Series. You can join by looking for the Discord link in the YouTube description or the podcast show notes. And finally, if you enjoy the podcast, please like, comment, and subscribe if you're watching on YouTube, or leave a rating or review if you're listening. You can leave a rating on Spotify and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if you don't enjoy the podcast, why are you even here? Go away. We don't want you around. But thank you, seriously, to everyone who rates and reviews us. It really does help us out. Okay, only one topic of conversation for today. That is Euro Formula. And if you've tuned in any time in the last month or two, you know what question I'm going to ask our guests. But I'm actually going to throw it to Discord user Checo, who asked it this way. How do you feel your season went? Freddie, why don't we start with you?
Okay. How do I feel my season went? Well,
take us through it from the start to the end. We've got the victory at the end, lovely ending to
all
it.
All right. But well, Josh isn't going to like the end, but I'll say it anyways. Start of the season, yeah, I mean, it was good. Obviously, Estoril was one of my strongest weekends, the opening round. So I had a fifth and 2 second places there. In all honesty, I thought that weekend was really going to set the tone for the year. But sort of the next 4 rounds after that up until the summer break just were filled with such bad luck for me and my guys, you know, my engineers, my mechanics. we just couldn't really seem to turn stuff around. So we weren't really getting on the podiums. And if I wasn't having bad luck, I was making mistakes like in Po and Spa, I stalled. But then had a summer break and came back refreshed and obviously learned so much in the first half of the season that the second half was really strong. And I think we were getting podiums almost every round. And in Austria, we came close to that win. Obviously led every lap and 6 quarters to go, my teammate gave me a puncture. We got the win in Barcelona and it was a strong season. And I managed to grab fourth place in the championship off Josh, which he's not very happy about, but it puts a smile on my face. So
I love when you say that and then it all starts clicking together, the kicking and screaming onto the podcast, suggesting that, hey, we get Josh on, he can talk about how I beat him in the championship is the way that
exactly.
Well, Josh, I suppose I could throw to you to, one, defend yourself, talk about, you know, who won more races, what really matters, mate. But how do you feel your season went?
Yeah, I think my season was good. At the beginning, you know, straight out of the box, front row for qualifying, which was really good. But like Freddie, you know, in the early phase of the championship, there was little mistakes of crashing and stalling at race starts, which wasn't really helpful. And also some bad luck. But from Spa onwards, you know, that's when everything started to flow. You know, two podiums in Spa and then straight to Hungaroring and then took the win there. And then had the summer break, which was a good way to end the first half of the season. And then the second half was just trying to carry that momentum forwards from the beginning all the way to the end. But, you know, the last race our weekend was a disaster, let's say. You know, with having contact with Ollie at the start of race one, that puts on the back foot for race two and three. But I think overall, a lot was learned in the season. And yeah, glad to carry that into my future.
Well, speaking of the season and your, you know, talk about the middle of the season, both of you actually talk about the middle of the season and it progressing. Is that just genuinely getting used to the car? I know, Josh, last year there's no silverware, this year plenty of. Is that something you just feel just getting more comfort, or was it something that actually just clicked and changed for you?
I think it just clicked and changed for me. You know, racing with Double R last year, you know, they taught me a lot. And going into the championship winning team, you know, you had to adapt really quickly with their car because it's a specific way to drive this car. So, you know, I think from a box, I had a good feeling. But, you know, with the inconsistency with the race starts and bad luck, didn't really help at the beginning.
Is that same on your side as well, Freddie? Is that something you just feel that it clicked a bit more, or was it just genuine luck?
I think the start of the season was tough, obviously, because if I wanted to be fast, I had to get all my sort of driving inputs, so like throttle technique, braking technique, steering technique. I had to get that all sort of perfect. And in the first half of the season, that was a lot harder for me to do. And also building a relationship with your engineer and being on the same page with him so he knows what sort of setup to give you. That was the toughest part for me to kind of grasp in the first half. But I think also having the summer break, that month off, for me, in all the seasons that I've done, I've always managed to come back in the second half stronger. And I think it's just because I have that sort of month off where I can really sort of focus on training and also get away from racing and not really, I don't speak about racing with my family when I have my summer break. So I think it's also that sort of reset. You come back where it's really fresh and you come back with a new sort of hunger, a new drive. And I think that's what made the second half obviously a lot stronger for me, as well as, you know, drive, just generally driving better. So I think very similar points to Josh, but also some more personal stuff, which I think also Josh will sort of agree with, that he does too.
I'll tell you something, after watching motorsport for so long, the idea of not talking about it in the summer break when I missed it so much just seems alien. But then as I've got further into the industry, the summer break is so necessary. That is a point where I don't want to think about cars. So yeah, I came back with renewed love for doing the podcast, renewed love for doing all the motorsport coverage I do. And yeah, I can completely understand what you mean. It does.
I mean,
it really does take it out.
Needed. Yeah, it is needed. And sometimes, even if you don't feel like you're in that sort of situation, you need a break. It's good to force yourself into it. Because as I said, you just come back with a better drive, a better hunger for it.
A bit of time to reflect on what you could do better. And I'm doing that from a writing perspective and everything. So I can imagine what it's like for driving. But speaking of not driving, Tom, I know you weren't racing in Euro Formula this year, maybe next year, but I'll be
debut next year.
There we go. That's an exclusive. Yeah. I'll be the first to admit we haven't shone the brightest light on Euro Formula compared to F2, F3 or Freca on the podcast this year. We had Olli Goethe on earlier, gave us some great insight. But how was the season from your perspective? How did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I really enjoyed the season, to be honest. I think I watched every round from Paul Ricard. So it was a pretty action-packed season. Obviously, less cars on the grid. Some people might think it's less entertaining, but it still brought out some amazing racing. And the championship battle actually got closer towards the end of the season, which was quite nice from the domination that Olli Goethe had until, I think, about Imola. So yeah, that was pretty interesting to watch. But yeah, it was a good season, and I'm hoping that next year can hopefully top it.
Do you think some of that side of things, when you talk about Olli Goethe not slipping up, because he's still got his wins for the championship in the end, yeah, but do you think that's part of it from the rest of the drivers that you saw on the grid who were just stepping up after that summer break?
I mean, definitely. Obviously, you know, Josh and Freddie here, they both said that something clicked during the summer break and they managed to step it up in the second half of the season. So obviously, Olli Goethe got, I think it was five wins in a row at one point. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it's something around that.
Yeah.
Five wins in a row is just a bit mental, to be honest. So, and then I don't think he got even a podium, the two podiums in a row from Imola, about that. So, yeah, I think the combination of everybody else stepping up and maybe Goethe just having a tough few races really made it closer towards the end.
F3 mini campaign broke him. He broke him properly, but it was great for, like you say, great for the championship, great for our guests here. And I say it every week, we've got loads of questions from the audience, and I do really want to spend more time on them this week. So I'm going to end it on these notes here. The future is pretty much it. What is 2023 going to have in store for you, Freddie?
Top secret information. No, 2023 is going to be a bit of a different route for me. I can tell you now it won't be any single seaters, just because the next logical step for myself was really FIA3 and sitting down with my family and you know, the people that help progress me through the ladders, my managers and my trainers. We didn't really think that FIA3 was a route that I could go. Obviously the budget for that championship is stupid. And the track time you get is really small. And to be honest with you, it just, unless you're someone that's incredibly talented like Oscar Piastri and you're in a Prem, I just don't see you doing well in your first year in FIA. So it's kind of a two-year project. And me being 18 and, you know, I have big ambitions for this sport. So I want to try and progress up the ladder as quickly as possible. I didn't feel like I had 2 years in that championship. So next year, I think we're looking at doing endurance stuff. Probably going to be hoping to jump in an LMP2 car and do some stuff in the World Endurance Championship, which is obviously a ginormous step from where I am. But I think it puts me into a really good limelight. Obviously, the seat time that you get in that championship is crazy, and the people you get to work with is really cool. So obviously we're in talks with people. I obviously can't say who those people are, but hopefully they get finalized and that's where I'll sort of be next year, aiming for a comeback in single seaters in sort of 2024 2025 kind of time.
I'll tell you something, I've spoken to some WEC drivers who, when they get out of the single seater world and get out of what they call the bubble, they really really enjoy it. Like they like you, they're like, oh, I thought I'd go back, get there, like, this is my career now, I can do this for 20 25 years. And the younger, because you don't see so many younger drivers do it, right? Like your age going through it does happen, but not so often. And I feel getting a jump start on that could be a massive step for you. So you seem really happy doing it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I've tested the P2 car already. I tested it in Portimao, and I absolutely loved it. I mean, I had a... So basically, it was... we had the Barcelona race weekend. So Sunday, I had to fly home because I had an A-level exam on Monday.
Typical problems,
And then Monday, I had to leave straight back to Portimao, and they lost my luggage. So I had all my kit in it. So I only had my helmet with me, and I got to the hotel on I don't know, I had 2 hours sleep, got in the P2 car the next day, and I woke up and I was like, I just want to go home at this point. You know, I don't have my kit, I've 2 hours sleep, I just want to go home. And we tested, and the team was so lovely, and I absolutely loved it. And that car honestly felt so similar to a Euro Formula car. I think if I manage to do that next year, I'm going to have a lot of fun, and I'm still going to be learning a lot, which is obviously the most important thing of it all, really.
Yeah, I mean, FIA F3 is obviously the next step that you mentioned, but getting on the WEC side of things, that is huge as well. So, well, I'm fascinated to see how that goes. That sounds amazing. So, fingers crossed, all that works out. Same question as well to Josh. Is it staying on the single-seater route for you, tin tops, something else? You're going to go and turn into God knows what. What's the plan? What's the plan?
Yeah, the plan is, you know, just try and still stay in single-seater. Nothing's confirmed yet, but I think 2023 is going to be more of a driver development year. Try and aim for a sort of like Freddie comeback into 2024 in single-seaters. But, you know, trying to aim to do TRS in January in New Zealand, nice. Which will be good to do because, you know, the seat time there is just immense. You know, you're doing a month's worth of driving, which is more than some F3 drivers do for the whole year. So, I'm going to go down that route and just focus on personally myself, you know, because I also do university as well. So try and get that sort of push on that, get out of the way so that when I make my comeback, when I do my comeback in 2024, you know, I'm fully ready, fully focused on that, and driver development for me.
You're getting the fallback plan of university while also just going to the other side of the world to enjoy TRS, which is so well renowned, so well regarded, and always get some terrific drivers that go there. Is that confirmed yet, or are you still looking at possibly doing it?
Still possibly looking at doing it, but it's looking likely. So,
have you gone down that way before, New Zealand or TRS?
No, I haven't.
As in to watch TRS, I mean, when I say that.
I've been watching the races, and you know the tracks over there just look incredible. So, if I do it, it'll be an absolute pleasure to do it. You know, because looking at the history of TRS, all these drivers have gone through it. You know, to be part of that, you know, just will be incredible.
Well, I'm thinking we'll be having Josh and a certain other Josh that's been on the podcast before, a certain YouTuber, as a special episode or something, maybe, that live from TRS. That'll be amazing. But that'd be great as well.
Josh Revel.
Is Josh Revel. Friend of the podcast.
I watch his videos. His videos are just, they're so funny.
I've always thought I don't want to be on Josh Revel's bad side because his videos are pretty brutal.
He says what he thinks.
Very, yeah, I mean, fair play.
Josh, nice guy.
That's kind of the way you've got to go, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
No filter with him.
He is great. He really is. But doing TRS will be great as well. That's two answers I didn't expect and two answers I really support. I'm not going to say this to other, you know, to say bad about other drivers, but sometimes you have very similar answers. Just like,
good answers.
You
know, good
Freca,
answers.
I'm going to do FIA F3. They're going to do FIA F2. They're going to make F1. And then I'm hearing these young drivers here really talking about looking at it a different way. Just a question which I know I am always fascinated about, and I don't, you can't speak too much about. The FIA F3 jump, and we're talking about the finances for it, which I know is ludicrous. And we had Jamie Chadwick on recently. She was saying she has, $500,000 for winning W Series? She's done it multiple times. And she said...
Three times and it still wasn't enough.
I couldn't afford the seat. She won two times before this year. She couldn't afford the seat to jump up. Yep. Is it simply the financial thing right now for you guys that it's just so cost prohibitive?
I'm happy to disclose the rumours that I've heard price-wise. I mean, I've heard top teams a minimum of $1.5 million to do about a championship.
Pounds or euros? Well, it doesn't make much of a difference these days.
I mean, yeah, not much of a difference, but yeah, euros. So, I mean, yeah, as I said, you're paying that money for you know, a track time. I think on Friday you get, what, an hour of track time on a Friday, and you go straight to quali and you try and you know, do your best. And even then, if you're not with ART, Premo or Trident, you know, you're going to have a tough time of it. So, yeah, I mean, from my side, me and my family sort of sat down and just like, well, what's the point, really? And as I said, it's a 2-year project. So you're putting that sort of cash into it for 2 years. And it's tough. So unless you've got financial backers, it's quite a tough championship to fund yourself, really.
Have you considered being born into the Stroll family? I've heard that's a really successful way of doing it. So.
I would love it. I mean, if they're up for it, I mean, I don't know how adoption works nowadays. Because
I love my parents, but I'm up for adoption.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah.
I appreciate your honesty. Just a quick one from me as well. Tom, 2023 plans. I know we spoke, jokingly, you're not racing next year. What are you looking forward to in 2023?
Everything. I mean, I'm especially looking forward. I mean, as the British F4 editor, I kind of feel as though I have to say this. I'm big into all sorts of Formula 4, and it's looking like the British F4 grid is going to be packed next season. So that's great. I know. I'm pretty sure you've done British F4, Freddie.
I did it. Yeah. I feel like the year I did it was not the strongest year for grid wise. I mean, obviously we had Zach and Sullivan and Luke Browning on that grid, but numbers wise, it wasn't that big. But it looks like British F4 is becoming a really strong F4 championship. Actually, it does look really cool. And I do actually feel jealous for some of these kids. They get to do a championship. It does look like a really strong breeding ground for.
How do you feel, Tom, good. And I feeling jealous? We get to look at you guys race these cars. That's, I think you raise a good point, though, because it has raised its profile a little bit, I think.
It has had a really, really strong comeback. Obviously, the year I did it, it wasn't great. It wasn't one of the best championships I've done, but now it does seem like a really sort of strong breeding ground for these young 15-year-olds to come into. So, I mean, it's fantastic to see, really.
That's enough questions from me, because the F1 Feeder Series podcast is for you viewers and listeners. We're going to move on to the hashtag AskF1FS part of the podcast. If this is your first time watching or listening, you can get involved by using the hashtag AskF1FS on Twitter, joining our Discord and using the podcast questions channel, commenting on our YouTube videos, or keeping an eye out on our Instagram posts and stories. Lots of questions, as we always do, so apologies if we don't read yours out. We'll try our best. We really are trying to get through all of them. I'm going to start with this one here from Dimitar Malamov on Twitter. Hello, question for both of you. Which changes would you implement to Euro Formula Open so it's more attractive to new teams and drivers? Also, Dallara or Tatis, what do you prefer to drive? Let's go with you first, Freddie.
Easy. So FIA super license points first thing. Obviously more cars. There's a whole list of things you need to do to get more cars, but just to keep it simple, more cars on the grid. And Dallara, for sure. Dallara is a fantastic manufacturer. They make brilliant cars. So that's it from me, really. I think that's it.
Is there echoes on your side for this, Josh?
Yeah, you know, I agree with Freddie. You know, you need more cars, the FIA points as well. And probably just how they could probably change the procedure again of how they do race weekends. When I was looking to do a Euro Formula back in 2021.
Quality race.
That was like brilliant to do, and you know. It's also good for driver development, because if you don't do well in qualifying one, you know, it's not like, oh, my weekend's over, you know, you've got another chance. Compared to this year, I think in the best terms was that if you were quick, you know, you're being penalized for being fast, which doesn't really make any sense. I agree 100% what Freddie said with the FIA points and more cars.
What is the situation with the super license points at the moment?
I'm not actually sure. Last I heard was that we were getting zero.
Wow.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah. Wow, yeah. That's
I mean, I don't know. I don't know in our case, because obviously like some championships do it, top five get points. Some championships do it just if the winner gets it. So Ollie maybe has points, but from what I understand is nobody's getting anything really.
Which kind of makes an expensive season.
Well,
it's marked as it does give super license points for the top seven positions in the championship, but clearly that isn't, or is out of date, or isn't around anymore.
I'll tell you something, it's so difficult to find out. One, how they dish out the super license points. We saw some of this with the whole debacle of Red Bull recently, with the Colton Herta stuff.
Yeah.
And two, what the current super license point is for people, because you look at something, so Logan Sargeant at the moment, you can Google it because people have had to do research and figure it out. But I find it bonkers that you can't just do a... There's no FIA website which says these are the super license points as they stand.
This is the list of drivers who have them, would be very...
Yeah, I mean, it's quite weird because obviously looking at me for doing the endurance stuff, the FIA have a paper that anybody can access quite easy actually for license grading. So it's a surprise that they, obviously, as you just said, they don't really do that for the points that people are on either.
Yeah, it's fascinating. But we could talk about this chapter and verse, I'm sure. So let's not. Just a final thing from you, Josh, on the... Do you want to mention anything on the Dallara front? On the...
Yeah, without a doubt, Dallara. You know, they just build brilliant cars. I think when I first drove a Dallara, this is incredible. This is just, amazing.
Actually, I will hang on. I do have to say that British F3, that is a Tatis tub. And Josh will agree, the year I did it, so it was the same car, and the year he did it before they changed the car. Yeah. But that was a fantastic package.
That
chassis and Cosworth together was unbelievable.
Good looking car as well. Looked great.
Yeah.
This one is from Neos from the Discord server, and it says, to both of you, do you listen to music before a race? And if so, what? So we'll go to Freddie first and then Josh.
I do. I do listen to music. It's funny that this question's been asked, because I was with Reese, Ushijima, and Josh. Yeah. Reese's music tastes from a day-to-day basis is sort of music me and Josh would choose to listen to get pumped up for a race. I do listen to music before a race, and not every race. Some race weekends I have it where I don't want to listen to music. Sometimes I have it where I need music to calm me down, or I need music to get me pumped up or get me angry. You know, I sort of changes from race to race, really.
Are we looking at BTS,
yeah,
Spice Girls, ABBA?
What are
you listening to?
Yeah, Mozart.
I have actually listened to Spice Girls before a race. It was Imola. Imola, I had
no
a
way.
Very,
that's amazing.
Very interesting choice of music. My go-tos are usually sort of like hip-hop, 80s sort of hip-hop, and
Spice Girls.
Spice Girls and house music. So Imola was a very chilled out weekend for me. So I had house music, Spice Girls, but the Doobie Brothers in there as well. We had all sorts going on for that weekend.
I tell you, I'm just looking for your season.
I didn't listen to Spice Girls during race two, because you know how that went down.
Yeah, no, for the whole of Imola, I had no aggressive songs, as I'd call it. Very laid back music that whole weekend.
And that's where you got your first, double podium after a bit of a...
Yeah, it's working, so clearly.
We found the key. Josh, please save us from Spice Girls conversation. I regret bringing it up.
No, I think Josh is more of an ABBA fan.
Yeah, to be fair, ABBA does do some wonders sometimes. They do some wonders. I'm also the same. I do listen to music before a race. Mine's very weird. I listen to music of the, you know, what I'm feeling at a specific moment. So it can be the calmest thing ever. It could be heavy rock, could be, you know, a lot of things like that. I listen to a lot of film scores, you know, from movies.
That's what I do all the time.
Yeah, I listen to film scores.
I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, a lot of people will think, whoa, that's so random. But, you know, listen to like some hero, like heroics music from specific movies like Batman, Superman.
Wow.
You know,
like, but you have all the Lord of the Rings stuff. Theme tune on for it.
Lord of the Rings. I was just about to say that.
Yes, I do. Yeah, I got everything. Everything you can think of, which is like even Star Wars, because you never, I don't watch Star Wars, but I have Star Wars.
Wow. Yeah, well, he had the Star Wars theme tune on for Barcelona, that's for sure.
You remember that, do you?
I listened to this year, I've been listening to a lot of that before races, film scores.
I tell you something, I went to see Hans Zimmer live and seeing some of that music that he did. Hans Zimmer,
yeah, that would have been insane.
Yeah, it was. It was great. So people don't know he does all the film scores for things like Batman.
Yeah.
Superman. Inception. Lion King, which is amazing. Got to see the Circle
Interstellar was amazing as well.
So I'm totally behind that. I feel that it's one of these, it's almost, people don't bring it up, but people do listen to movie soundtracks and they're badass. Like, they're really, really good. So
no, they really are. You know, it makes me feel like I'm trying to be the hero of my own story, which is obviously racing. You know, so
that is a line for the ages. I want to be the hero of my own story. I love that, Joss. That's great. So when you get the Riders of Rohan coming on, it's like, I'm part of Riders of Rohan.
So when everyone sees me have headband for a race, they go, I know exactly what that guy's
doing. Yeah, exactly. Now I know. I know forever now.
Terrific. What a great answer. Thank you so much for that question, Dios. Didn't expect this answer, but I love that. I'm going to get this next one again for both of you. This is from 2 and 4 Wheels News. At S55 Carlos, I wonder who they support, on Twitter. Hello, a question for both. Let's go with you first on this one, Josh. What were your highlights, I presume highlights of the year, and what goals do you have for next year?
I think the highlights of this year had to be actually race two in Paul Ricard and my spa weekend. And only because in all three of those races, I had to start at the back, and it was a lot of fun, you know, coming back through the field. You know, it was just awesome to do, especially at Ricard, where it's quite difficult to overtake, from going from P12 over to P4. And for next year, just my goal is, you know, just become a better driver so that when I jump into single seaters again in 2024, you know, we are there, we are ready, like we never left.
Simple answer for the next year. I support that completely. A little bit of TRS fun as well, and then see what happens. Freddie, yourself?
Highlights
of the year, goals for next year?
Leaving the paddock in Barcelona. No, highlights from this year. I think highlights was definitely for me race three, Austria. Obviously, getting in the lead of a race from sort of turn one and for the first time sort of controlling the race, which I've never really done. So sort of got to see for myself how much easier it is to lead a race, to control the pace than one would imagine. And, you know, for me, that was a really sort of powerful moment. And even though it ended in sort of a heartbreak, but for me, it was on the track that was a win. So, and then goals for next year, obviously build on more memories, more wins in this game. Wins are really important. And obviously learn as much as possible whilst keeping single seaters, you know, on the forefront of my, sort of career, really.
Just a question from my side. I've played iRacing and mediocre, but I know the feeling when you go to the lead or you're like going to get a podium, like, holy shit, this could actually happen. Is that what it's like?
Yeah.
Like, is this happening?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd been in sort of positions last year where podiums were a case. So for me, that this year, that wasn't a real sort of feeling. It was more, once I got the lead, it was sort of like, oh, okay, I can see how people just, you know, control it, especially in Euroformula with the dirty air isn't actually like strong in the sort of sense that you wash out. It's just very good at keeping you from attacking. And yeah, once I sort of got the lead, it was you can sort of back off here and go faster here, and you can really, really control what the others behind you are doing. So that feeling, you know, I was having to tell myself, you need to calm down, because already on the fifth lap in my mind, I was like, I've done it. But yeah, obviously in those moments, sort of composure and discipline is, you know, the key sort of skills to keep your head down and sort of remember you've still got a long way to go, really.
A lot of noises of agreement from you there, Josh, as well. You got anything to add?
Yeah. You know, very times and correct. You know, for me, from not leading at all from 2021 to now winning races in 2022, you know, for me, it was a great feeling. And, you know, for me personally, when I was leading, you know, controlling the pace is quite easy to do. But sometimes when you're at the front, you got no one in front of you.
Yeah,
so,
you know,
there's no reference. So it's actually quite easy to snap out of that load of chasing and try and go fast every single lap. So for me, you know, it's really important what Freddie said about just focusing on that. Like sometimes when I was leading this year, you know, I was actually doing a running commentary to myself of what I'm doing. You know, I sort of go, okay, this corner, this is happening. Next corner, that's going to happen. And yeah, keeping your mind and your body all one when you're leading the race, it's very important. So,
a hero of your own story in the commentary in your head. I like that. I like that a lot. Tom,
no, I actually verbally say it. I actually verbally say it.
When you speak it, when you're driving,
yeah,
wow.
Yeah, I speak it.
What a way. I would have no idea. I suppose, yeah, that's not public.
Like near the end, like when it's like the last two laps, when then the last lap, obviously your body's full of adrenaline. You're like, okay, you can't mess up now. You've got one more lap to go. That's when I start talking to myself and just keeping calm until you come out that last corner.
I love that. I've said it on the podcast before with like the younger generation, like people your age coming through the ranks. These are the things that might have happened 20 years ago, but people wouldn't speak about it. Like, this is how I keep myself calm. Because you have to portray this, no, I'm always in control thing. I like just people share, this is how I do things. That could be something that somebody listening now thinks, that's what I'm going to do when I'm iRacing or whatever it is they're doing in life. So I love that, Josh. Brilliant, brilliant answer. Tom, please, next question.
Next question is from fellow driver on our Discord, Callan Edwards. And he says to both of you, what advice would you give to people in karting? So we'll go to Josh first and then Freddie for this one.
Just in karting alone? Or
just generally.
In karting, yeah. That's no driving in single seat. It's just karting, he's asked.
I think in karting, you know, just everything you do, just take everything in, you know, because karting is such a good learning base before you make that jump to cars. Maybe the racing is obviously a little bit different because you can't like bump drop in single seaters because, you know, it's a front wing gone. But yeah, but you know, take everything in karting, enjoy it. That's number one. Enjoy it and have fun, learn a lot, learn so much as you can, and take that into if you jump into cars.
Just a question from me, and I want to hear you as well, Freddie, this, but Josh, how tall are you?
I'm 6 foot dead.
Yeah, I'm 6 foot four, okay. So I'm tall. And I don't know what it is. I could just see the position of you in the cars. Like, this guy's tall, and yeah. I was like, when I go karting, not on a professional level, on a stag do weekend.
Yeah,
I'm heavy. I'm tall. The kart is shit. You know, all the usual excuses. How can you use your height for your advantage? I'm asking this as a serious question, so I can beat people.
Honestly,
lean over the sort of rear axle.
It's leaning on outwards, so you get more grip on the.
Does this mean that you can just like stick your head out and bump into?
Yeah, there was one karting driver in Europe who did it. Actually, you'll see it on some of the streams that the WSK rounds. I'm not sure his name, but I think he drove for Kart Republic or CRG.
Yeah,
And he was about, I think, 6'3".
Wow.
If you watch him, he's sort of, you know, out over that axle, just putting load on the tires.
So always putting the one that needs to be getting more grip to get you around the corner.
Yeah,
the opposite side.
Yeah.
When you kart at a sort of professional level, you can get different seats, so they sort of sit you more scooped down, so you're laid back more, so your height isn't acting as much as a sail.
Yeah, I feel as a sail. Like Bowser on Mario Kart. above the height things, Freddie, what are your suggestions and recommendations?
Just sort of emulate what Josh said. I think main thing is you need to enjoy it. When I look back at when I did karting, I didn't even do it for very long or very seriously. There were a lot of times where I didn't enjoy it. And I've only really managed to get a hold of enjoying racing now. So when I look back at it, I wish I'd had the same sort of mindset. So that's the most important thing is you need to enjoy it. Get as much time in the car as you can. But don't get fixated on it too much, because single seaters is a different ball game. And don't burn yourself out. You know, if you've got ambitions in this sport, it's a long old road. There's a lot of downs, more downs than ups. Don't burn yourself out and enjoy it.
It's one of those weird things, motorsport, isn't it? That unlike football, where one team wins or loses, or both teams are happy with a draw, most people lose every single week. So it's guaranteed most people will not be happy with the weekend. I'm going to be able to, we've had it in the past, but we've never really formalized it. But I had a bunch of questions this week, so I'm going to call this the F1 Feed Series podcast section. So questions from a few people here. I'm going to start, it's going to go for you as well, Tom. You're going to answer some of these questions. Let's go Freddie, Josh, Tom for this first one. Evgeny at Toomey5666 on Twitter. Question to all of you, sushi or lasagna, gang?
Yes, finally.
The bit you were waiting for.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, you know, it's good, because I've actually, it's information that I want out there.
Just put it in your Instagram bio.
My grandmother's Japanese, and her side of the family is all Japanese, so I've got quite a lot of Japanese heritage. So for me, it's sushi. Hands down. I don't like lasagna anyways, so that was an easy question.
we'll stop on that, because both are acceptable. But also, I feel that you're saying that because you're angling for a bit of a Yo Sushi sponsorship gig. Is that why you want the information out there?
Exactly. That's what I need. Itsu, Yo Sushi, any of them. My Instagram is at Frederick_Lubin. So yeah.
Well, some slander against lasagna. I mean, who even does that?
Yeah, I would rather bolognese, in fairness.
I understand it, but you can't start saying, you can't start slagging lasagna off like that. That's unacceptable, mate. Josh, please.
Yeah. I mean, it is 2022, so maybe I'll sort of retract that statement. Lasagna is good, but bolognese is better.
Okay. Josh, sushi or lasagna?
I love both, but I'm more sort of sushi. I had sushi with Fred like last week.
We actually had killer sushi last week.
Next time you guys on the podcast, we'll have you both in a sushi place. And
yeah, start cooking.
Yeah, exactly. We'll get Reese on it too. We'll get Reese. He's more Japanese than me, so he's sort of the
thing with Reese, though, is the biggest thing I remember from his podcast appearance is he was on about, I can't remember what it was, like the breakfast wrap from M&S when you go on
a service station. Because he was giving advice to Joseph.
He is one of those.
Yeah.
that was his key advice on how to be successful, is get the breakfast wrap. Breakfast sandwich from M&S.
Yeah, I remember one morning I was with him. We were on the way to a karting track and we stopped at Starbucks, and I saw him eyeing up the breakfast wrap from Starbucks.
the benefits of living.
I was wondering if he's going to pick it, because it's not a very sort of racing driver diet, especially on a race weekend. So
not at all.
Interesting to see.
Tom, your answer to this sushi lasagna gang?
I'm going to be honest, I don't like sushi. I'm not that into the seafood. Seafood just isn't
that's fair enough.
Area.
That's but I do love factor, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I do love a lasagna, so I'll have to go with that.
Okay, well, you can have non-seafood size of sushi as well. Just going to point that out. And still
terrific. Yeah, there is chicken. There is chicken and steak.
Okay, maybe I'll have to...
In that.
There's also there's also vegetable ones as well. So you've got plenty of choice, Tom. Give it a go. A good roll is always good. Right. Let's move on. Ashley by Discord. To both Josh and Freddie, I'm going to put Tom on this as well.
This is
important, mate. Josh first, then Freddie, then Tom. Yeah. If you had to live off a cheese for the rest of your life, what cheese would it be?
Oh, Eva.
There's no Evas here. It's one cheese.
Josh is a Gouda. Josh is a Gouda type of man.
A Gouda man. I don't know. Probably Colombe, I think.
Colombe? Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's a solid answer. Freddie?
I think I'm going to go with Stilton, because you either love it or hate it. I feel like that's the sort of just the way to go, really, isn't it?
Okay. I have to say that's the most thought I've seen you put into any answer on the podcast so far. Tom?
I'm trying to think. Like, there's this really, it's really niche cheese from like the UK in Yorkshire. And there's this cheese factory in Yorkshire. And there's this really nice cheese, but I can't remember what it's called. So
that's what you go with, the obscure.
Yeah. I can't remember what it is.
We'll leave it to the viewers to find out what cheese that is.
Then. Just Yorkshire cheese.
Okay. I've done it myself.
If you know what Tom's talking about, then tell us.
Yeah.
We need to know. And then finally, Tom, you can lead on this one, and then we'll go Freddie Josh. Not English as proven by DNA via Discord. What is your favorite meal? It might be sushi, lasagna, it might be cheese, I don't know. But what is your favorite meal? No limits.
It's my favorite meal. Probably quite boring, but I really like pizza. I think I could eat at least two full pizzas very easily in one sitting. So,
what size of pizza are you talking about? I've got a friend who says he could eat a full Costco pizza, and I'm like, that's impossible, mate.
No, I couldn't eat a full Costco pizza.
That's a big pizza as well.
Yeah. That's a big pizza.
No, that's not happening.
So I think you're all in agreement that's not possible, because I'm going to clip this.
It's like a Pizza Express size pizza you could eat two.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. The size of adult pizza at Pizza Express, I could eat two of those easily.
Thin crust?
Yeah, I like both thin and thick crust, so that's
nice.
Okay, Freddie?
Are we going with nationality or meal?
Just any meal. Any meal. No matter the cuisine, whatever meal you like.
I mean, it changes. I'm a big foodie.
At the moment then, October, well, actually November when this podcast actually goes out. November,
I mean, it doesn't even fit in with season. Honestly, right now, I think I'd probably say like a Lebanese. Lebanese cuisine. I'd go with that,
Okay, I don't know enough about Lebanese cuisine to press you for a specific answer, so I'll let you off the cuisine. Josh, how about yourself? You've had the most to think about this, so you need to have a good answer here.
Well, I'm the same as Fred. I can't, like, choose one. You know, I love my foods. If I had to choose one on a day, like, day-to-day, probably, like... Actually, I don't know. I'm really hard. It's really hard to think of it. It's like really hard.
My God.
It's the tension. It's so tense.
It's the tension because, you know, if I say a bit of food, I can imagine the comments saying, oh, I didn't know Josh Mason like that.
I'm gonna point this out right now that no one's going to force you to eat this food. This is a hypothetical question.
I know it's hypothetical, but yeah. You know, I had to give a good answer.
The team are only going to feed you this food for the rest of your racing career.
I'm just saying that. It's a traditional dish from my mother's side. It's
called double. So it's basically a roti wrap with chickpeas and like potatoes inside.
Oh, very nice. I love chickpeas. Yeah. That's a good answer. And your mom's side of the family is from where?
Yeah, so my mom's from Trinidad and Tobago, so in the Caribbean.
Yeah, lovely food. Similar heritage as well on my side. And actually, question from, I believe it's Bam, but I mean, he's using all sorts of fancy letters, like an umlaut in this via Discord. Question Sam, somewhat related. Sam. Is that a Sam? Yes, double S, I suppose.
Yeah, it's Sam. Yeah.
Sam. To Josh, how is being a person of colour in racing? Do you think you have a champion at the highest level, given Do you think having a champion at the highest level has given people a role model to aspire to? I know this is a difficult question for you because you can't imagine a world without Lewis Hamilton, I suppose.
Yeah.
But is that something that would have has inspired you?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. You know, seeing someone like Lewis achieve what he's achieved in Formula One is just incredible. Not just for people like me, but for the sport in general. Mm. But firstly, back following to the beginning of the question, you know, I still see it as I'm just another racing driver trying to come up through the ranks. You know, I don't really fixate on it so much. Mm. You know, it would be good to have more drivers like me in the sport, of course. But I'm just not really, don't really concentrate on too much.
No, I'm completely in agreement with it. So I'm half black, half white British, also half Caribbean. So I completely understand it. It's just like, I feel people ask a question and I love that it's an open conversation. I don't think it should be taboo. But I feel when people do bring it up, I'm just like, I just don't know any other way. This is just my life. You know, you say before, you're the hero of your own story, but you don't know. I'm also an only child. People say, what's it like being an only child? It's like, I don't know, what's it like having siblings? Yeah. There's no way to know what the other side of things are. So, yeah, I think that's a fair answer as well. And I want to just back you up on that. Also, you got another question from AS19 via Discord, which, Tom, I'd like you to ask, if you'd be so kind.
Yes. So Alex asks, do you feel like your late start to racing, you were 14 for anybody who doesn't know, still affects you in 2022?
The dinosaur of the grid.
Good one.
The dinosaur with three wins.
Yeah.
Oh, someone had to go there.
I think when I jumped into cars, definitely yes. But now I think I've gone to a point where, you know, I feel I'm just as good as anyone else on the track now. So all I would say it's affected me in 2022. Of course, having the early stages of racing when you're much younger definitely would have helped. But I see it as, if you think you have the potential, doesn't matter what age you start at, but you think you've got that belief, then I don't see it as a problem.
Fair enough.
Go on then, Jim. Start your racing career.
Yeah, I've thought about it, you know, just as a 34-year-old about to jump into British F4, I thought I'd have a really good chance.
Yeah, at
6'4". At 6'4" as well.
For it.
Just like a sail, just covering the engine. The engine
in sail.
I'm going to skip ahead to this just final question from Densington via Discord. I'm going to point to you specifically, Freddie. Ask them why their simulator training was therapy. Any good stories about their simulator training? That's all I've got from this.
Any good stories?
Simulator training, well, why it was therapy.
Therapy.
Just some of the best Alex Garcia stories is what I've been asked to ask you.
Oh, God.
That's dangerous.
Obviously, a sim session is not the same if Alex Garcia is not there. yeah, I mean, Alex would do race simulations doing the track backwards. I think that says all you need to know, really. I think we did a race sim for Paul Ricard and I couldn't get to turn one without Alex hitting me. Alex was a great teammate this year. And yeah, I've got a lot of love for Alex and a lot of respect for him. But yeah, the sim stories are all pretty similar, like that, driving the track backwards and crashing into teammates.
So this sort of prep that you need for a race to see what that's like when you're driving.
In all honesty, with some of the races, how they turned out, I think the crashing and the driving backwards was a pretty accurate simulation, really.
I have one good story of Alex on the sim.
Okay.
We were like Fred, you know, we're doing race simulations for Spa, and it was actually myself, Alex, and Tom Dillman. We're all on the server, and Tom and I are racing properly hard. Like, okay, Alex has already hit someone, so he's out of the equation. So it's now me and Tom racing, and we were going through Blondermon, going to the bus stop, and I saw yellow flags.
See this motor park car.
I was like, in my head, why is there a yellow flag? Like, I haven't gone to the sector, and there's a wild Alex coming away. But while Alex comes the other way, and I literally, Tom darts to the left, and I hit Alex head on because I was right on the draft with Tom. So when Tom darted, there was some motor park, car 24, just right in my face.
But Josh, how has this helped you driving? You know, in reality, this must have helped.
In reality, I think it definitely helped for reaction time for sure. to avoid an accident or avoid accidents. And
if you're not going to become a racer, you'll be a spin doctor to get an answer that quick to turn that into a positive. That is a really good answer.
I can extend it by saying, you know, I think my starts this year when I got everything right was fairly fast. So I think that definitely helps.
Oh, to get away from the chasing.
Get away from
the rubbish.
I think you called it the wild Alex. That's what you called it. To get away from the wild Alex.
Yeah, even though it's wild Alex, you know, same as Fred, you know, he was a brilliant teammate. You know, I love him loads. And, you know, even when things didn't go so well for him, he's always smiling. And I think that's really good.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think that's a perfect way to end the podcast. That's all the time we have this week. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. If you'd like to have your question asked in a future episode, use the hashtag AskF1FS on Twitter. Drop any questions below if you're watching on YouTube. Respond to our Instagram stories or posts, or let us know what questions you have on your mind on our Discord. Look for the podcast questions channel. If you're watching on YouTube, dropping a like on the video, leaving a comment and subscribing really, really helps us out. And if you're listening, like I said earlier, leaving a review on the podcast platform you're listening on is greatly appreciated. Finally, check out F1FeederSeries.com for more Feeder Series insights, and follow F1FeederSeries1, F1FS Americas, and F1FS Live on Twitter. You can find the links to all of those, plus Twitter accounts for myself and everyone else on the podcast, in the YouTube description or the podcast show notes. Until next time, we have been the F1 Feeder Series podcast. Josh can finally get driving to wherever he's going to go in his car. Goodbye.
See you guys.